We're now ready for the keynote panel on contemporary Aboriginal poetics. The chair is Peter Minter, who, if you were here this morning, presented a paper that he thought might be controversial, and it got to be, which is terrific. And it was part of one of three really excellent, formidable, thought-provoking papers. And now we move to this one. Peter, as I said, will be the chair and moderator. The three speakers are Ali Kabi Eckerman, Natalie Harkin, and Stuart Cook. And so please welcome our panelists and chair.
Thank you all for being here, and can I begin by acknowledging that we're on Aboriginal country and pay our respects to their countrymen and women and elders. But also to thank Lynn, Eric, Kate, and Anne for very generously creating this space in the context of bringing Australian poetics to Berkeley for obviously what we consider to be a very important part of our work in Australia in Aboriginal culture and poetics. I'll leave our guests, we have a very short amount of time, so I'll leave our guests to introduce themselves when they speak. Ali Kabi Eckerman, Natalie Harkin, and Stuart Cook. I will begin before Ali steps up, though, to, if you haven't had a chance to look at the Australian news in the last few days, in the inaugural New South Wales Premier's Prize, Indigenous Writers Prize, which we've been lobbying for many years now, both Ali and Natalie have had their work shortlisted in that prize. Alongside Bruce Pascoe, Tony Birch, Ellen Burton-Eden, and Tony Williams. So congratulations, Ali and Matt. It's my great pleasure to be here. I'm seated in the chair, previously occupied by Charles Altieri, to be moderating this discussion. So please welcome Ali Kabi Eckerman.
On behalf of my family and my language group, the Yunkundatta people of Central South Australia, I'd like to read this poem first. It's titled Kulala, which means listen in our language. Sit down, sorry camp. Might be 1 week, might be long, long time. Tell every little story when the people was alive. Tell every little story more. Don't forget them, story. Nighttime, tell them to the kids. Tell every story live. Don't change them, story. Tell them straight out, story. Only one way, story. All around them, story. Every place we've been. Every place, killing place. Sit down here real quiet way. You can hear them crying. All them massacre mobs. Sit down here real quiet, you can feel them dying, all them massacre mobs. Hearts can't make it up. When you feel the story, you know it's true. Tell every little story when the people was alive. Tell every little story more. Might be 1 week now, might be long, long time. Sit down, sorry camp. So I've chosen this photo of my traditional land. I belong to the Anangal, the Yunkundatta Pitjantjatjara people of South Australia. But of course I did not always know this because I was tricked away from my family as a baby. So this is my country. It is a beautiful book. And I suggest it has only one country. This image represents my book. It's filled with food and medicine, and that road's a highway. There's a grocery store out there. There's a clinic. There's a university that's held under the shade of the trees. There's a cultural knowledge that exists from the time of creation. I was very lucky when I found my family. My cultural heritage has been unbroken since creation. So for me, this book has only one chapter, and it's a beautiful chapter because it encompasses anything. Nothing can be removed and put in another chapter. Everything belongs in one chapter. All aspects of our being are encompassed in this chapter, from our Tjukurpa creation stories, our laws, the dance, the song, the ceremonies, the responsibilities, the kinship frameworks, marriage guidelines, the onus on childhood upbringing and elderly care. It's a book of love. Every aspect of our culture was about love. Even our punishments were about love, because they were about teaching. They weren't about punishment. They were about teaching, and for the better good of everyone, because we're a tribal community, not an individual community. It's an amazing chapter that, if learnt well, provides a cultural framework with such intelligence to guide one through every day of your life. It is a chapter of both protection and holistic well-being. It is the best book I have found because I'm no longer fragmented. As I said, I was taken away, tricked away from my family as a baby. I grew up in Ngadjeri country. I was born on Kaurna country. And I have put the Aboriginal map up there if people can have a look later. This is how Aboriginal people see Australia, which is really quite different from how other people see Australia with the states and the territories. We see a very rich land of many countries. But despite my removal from my family, my story was embedded in the landscape of Australia in a both contemporary and cultural context. Born on Kaurna land, growing up on a farm with the Eckerman family on Ngadjeri land, not having really any understanding of that, knowing you were different, but not having any understanding. One of the most profound memories is that my German grandmother, through the Lutheran Church, she had Aboriginal domestics who used to work for her. She lived in the Brossa Valley, through the Lutheran Church. They were the first Aboriginal people I met. They sort of terrified us a bit. We were little kids, and they were always playing jokes of, like, hide-and-seek and in the dark. I still remember just Jennifer's teeth and then her laugh as we ran away. I was 17 when I ran away. I was very unhappy. And I ran to the Nullarbor, to a place called Aldia, which was associated with Maralinga. I made reference to Maralinga, where the British dropped did their atomic bomb testing in South Australia. I lived out there for 2 years in a violent relationship. But these old people used to come up from a place called Yallada on the coast, and they used to sit there along the railway line, and I used to take water over and sandwiches or just sit with them. And I felt like they knew me, but of course I was just... I thought I was actually living out there to avoid a jail sentence. That's why I sort of thought I went. But I walked that country and with the dogs, so I'd borrow everyone's dog. There's only six people living there. It was 8 hours to the nearest shop. It was very isolated. But I just loved the desert. And we went exploring, and I found these old soakages and little carvings of kangaroos and sunburnt boomerangs and... It was just this fascinating story. The violence of that relationship after a length of time, I'd grown up a couple of years, and I didn't want to be in that place anymore. I went to the hospital up at Cook and had a pregnancy test, and it came back negative. So I thought, well, that's a good time to leave, and jumped on the train and went back to my adopted parents. Little did I know that a little spirit had jumped in. And so within a few months of returning home with whatever dignity I could muster, there's a lot of shame about going home after you've run away, I realised I was pregnant. Sadly, the church did a good job on my adopted parents and they couldn't encourage me to keep that baby, and so I lost my firstborn and only child. So then I fucked off to Central Australia. I was angry, I was hurt, everything I knew, everything that I'd relied on had been broken, and I went further into the desert, working out of Alice Springs, places like Yindamu. These were cultural Aboriginal communities. Went out camel catching in the Simpson Desert. That was my place where I felt safest. Eventually, those employments led me to a place called Tichikala. And I got the job as a manager of the art centre. So here I was, living within my family, having a really interesting job at the art centre. And one day I was walking back to my place for lunch, and over the sandhill, a lady who I knew as Mavis yelled out, "Ellie, we didn't know you was the baby." And I thought, I wonder what that means. And I remembered one of the domestics' names was Mavis. And I said, "Mavis, is that you?" There were 6 Aboriginal domestics in my German family, and 5 of them came from Tichikala. I'd really made it home. And I just want to take a moment to just say that if I do get emotional and the tears come, it's the honouring. I'm not sad. But those women visited me in my dream last night. I was in heaven. I was in paradise. I was embedded into the network of the kinship network that exists right across the desert. I was learning to dance. I was learning my language. I was learning to sing. The old ladies said, "Use your English ways and get a Toyota." And then we would just take off and they would show me sights. We were just always, the women was teaching and healing. And the men came and said, "Ali, we are your family. We want to heal you too because your journey has hurt you so much." Then the intervention came. The government decided that these people needed guidance in their lives. They said the men were all beating their wives and raping their children, and that there needed to be a huge intervention about social structure for Aboriginal communities. These were the people that had saved my life. These were the people that had given me back my dignity. These were the people that had given me a book better than the Bible that I could understand and start walking on the path that was my birthright. So I returned to Ngadjeri country. I returned to the mid-north where I'd grown up on the farm. And there, with the knowledge that I'd learnt in the desert, I used to go down to the creek, the Broughton River, and sit where the first patch of sunlight hits on winter's morning. I used to sit there and imagine the old people. After a while, I could hear them. I could smell their campfire. And as I re-explored this place that I'd played as a child, that land gave me the story of Ruby Moonlight. Our stories are written in the land, in the trees, the rocks. It was such a wonderful gift that this land had remembered me and welcomed me back with a story that's now published, an award winner. It's been published in America and also Russia. Ruby Moonlight had the power to bring even the USA and the USSR together. I'm going to read from Ruby Moonlight. In warm afternoon light, a family group roves the plains, murmurs delight as landscapes become familiar. parrots surge their welcome at an old meeting place. A young woman gathers wild fruits and berries. In the shade of gum trees, the old women sing clan songs. As the cooking fires begin, a wombat gives his soul. Sated now, the women dissolve down a cryptic path. Under the moon's glow, gratitude and joy are danced. He can see the women hurrying back from the hidden pathway, their movements clumsy in haste. He can see his brother running from the ochre cliff, signalling, "Get the spears ready." Fear in their eyes, the women whisper, "There is danger here." In gesture language, the old man signals, "Shh, the air is wrong." The old man and his wife hold parliament with magpies. Within the meeting circle, chatter is warbled with worry. The remainder of the tribe waits in the shadows. Their trust in tribal ways is absolute. They watch in silence, ready to flee. The meeting erupts in a bird storm. Strange animals and pale men burst from the river. Hack, hack, hack. Hands, heads, hearts. The clan slaughtered. Dying, dying, dead. A young woman sits like rock, staring at her husband and mother, their bodies termed tombstone. This survivor is a Lubra of the Shadow Tribe, who have lived here since time began. In their passing, will anyone notice? Her new life starts, this young woman of 16 years. She washes herself in the stream, scrubs her skin with handfuls of coarse sand. With a stone knife, she raises her matted hair. It burns acrid on the embers. The knife slices into her thighs, one sorry mark for each family member. She rubs ash into the wounds, dictated by cultural ritual. Blood mingles in the shallow pool, dissolving the pain and the past. She departs among the trees. Her long shadow stumbles. He feels her before he sees her. She remains hidden, watching. He is glad of the company. He begins to offer plates of food. She accepts the offerings under cover of night. Good friendships blossom slowly. She leaves bird's eggs and dead echidna by the empty plates. He introduces sugar. She begins to sleep by his fire. They make love. The first bird sings a new dawn. She is glad Jack is a man of few words. Jack is glad she is a woman of few needs. In their remoteness, they are heaven. In their remoteness, they are earth. Remoteness is essential for their merger. It is forbidden for Europeans to fornicate with blacks. Ruby sees signs that mob is near. Spot fires form in her eyes. A kookaburra's half call signals their need for her at dawn. Packing essentials in an old flour bag, she steps into the early morning chill. Wood smoke leads her, eager to hear language stories. Outside their camp, Ruby hesitates, waiting for her invitation. The movements of these people are slowed by fatigue. The eyes of these people are weary from worry. Possum is shared with whisperings and warnings. Camp smoke whispers, tell story of the wire. Camp smoke whispers, tell story of the killings. It is harder to hide. Old trees are vanishing. It is harder to journey. Ancient tracks are risky. Ruby pretends naivety to these new perils. An old dancer reads Ruby's loss in her downcast eyes. Curiosity can kill animals, reptiles, mammals, and man. The sun sparkle fuels inquisitiveness, guessing the location he climbs. In the treetop, breathless, Jack stares at semi-precious stones. A chunk of gold and his mirror? Jack smiles the horizon. His troubles are over. Rare money for a rare visit, Jack ambles to the beer house. Froth shampoos his new-grown beard. The beard tastes like liquid gold. Gold can loosen many a tongue, while silent eyes pry. When the cash is drunk, he gently conjures up a gem. Shouting drinks for the bar of men, he coaches ditties to sing. A musicless man stands aloof in the bar, scowling his hatred for the mix. He decides to surveil the singing fool. The man with no music, allergic to lilting laughter, exits the rackety room. The glimpse of that crystal traded over the beer-swilled bar jolts his memory of gems collected. Hunting disease, stinking blacks, for civil duty and personal pleasure, a particular ambush sticks in his mind. Fizzing with frenzy, he fired his gun with precise accuracy, maiming a black man and his whore. In a fur pouch, he found crystals and their newborn son. That day, he lost his music heart. Those crystals funded drunken days, an endless torment of debauchery and violence. He carries his wickedness in his saddlebag, the mummified hands of that boy. Offered a place to sleep, Jack swags in the stable. On awakening, he gulps water to flush his blurry head. On departing, he returns to the dimness of the store, trades another precious stone for a small dress. Caution is lost as he imagines his ebony princess, but danger is assured by the storekeeper's gossipy chin. Ruby walks naked to join the old dancer. Jack stays trapped, motionless inside himself. The dress, once worn, empty on the floor. The old dancer, two young warriors, one lubra looking back, hurry against the skyline. The silhouettes of four will not be seen in this land again for 90 years. In this country, there is sadness. In this sunset, a ruby moonlight. My life has been unusual in the fact that I feel my life has been lived in reverse. I got to feel my mother's touch for the first time at age 33, to hug and kiss my son for the first time 4 years later when he was 18, to have lived in free fall and only enter my education system at a mature age. I found my book of love. But today, our stories are often trapped in another book with many chapters, the urban book. And I'll finish with this poem about Aboriginal people in urban settings. It's called Black Deaths in Custody, which is the equivalent of Black Lives Matter. Despite the cost, a new jail has been built. It seems the incarceration rates are trebling. I only came here in the role as a deaths in custody inspector. All the cells are stark and spotless. Blank screens watch from the corner. The officers have the highest technology. The faces of the staff still look the same. And when I walk down this wing and peered into this filthy room, the door closed behind me. The feeling in my heart is changing from a proud strength of duty to fear. All the stories I have ever heard stand silent in the space beside me, and a coil of rope is being pushed under the door of this cell.